With my 35 years of experience, our team at US Asset Management can deliver professional investment management, financial planning to help you target your goals, and even specialized divorce financial analysis if you need it. We are here to help you make better decisions with your money. Call US Asset Management today, and let's get to work on your financial future.
Down, four, down, five, down, six.
I'm lost on time. 2 days ago now, in the cabinet meeting, sitting right next to him. He looks in the camera and says, well, Iran can either do it the right way, with a deal, across the table, or they can deal with my guy on the left. That happened to be me. But it's not me, it's you guys.
Well, as you said, President Trump is the one who's going to make that decision, and President Trump alone. He's directly, personally involved in the negotiations, making sure that the results are up to his standards. As you've outlined, Iran has made significant, material, and dramatic concessions to the United States that would have been impossible only a short time ago because of the military battlefield defeat that they have suffered, and the embargo continuing to choke the life out of their economy. But let's understand something else. It's very important to baseline this all on where we are today versus where we started. When Obama signed the Iran nuclear deal, the so-called JCPOA, Iran was on a guaranteed path to a nuclear weapon, to being the dominant power in the region, to being the richest and most militarily threatening nation in the entire Middle East, with the ability to launch ballistic and ultimately nuclear weapons to Europe and eventually the United States. Now, because of President Trump, their economy has been dismantled. Their nuclear program under Operation Midnight Hammer has been obliterated. Their entire defense industrial base has been eradicated. Their navy's at the bottom of the sea. Their air force at the bottom of the sea. Their entire leadership class has been decapitated. It is the most complete, thorough, total military thrashing in the history of armed conflict. 4 weeks and a country decimated to that degree, to that extent. And now here we are at the end of that with Iran putting on the table a complete reopening of the strait, as has been discussed, and many other concessions that are going to be unveiled in the time to come. But again, there's no deal until there's a deal. Nothing's final until it's final. And President Trump has been clear that he reserves the option now or at any time in the future to do whatever is necessary to defend and protect America's national security.
You just said now that we believe that Iran is negotiating in good faith. But why do we believe that the ceasefire is holding when we keep on intercepting missiles that keep on striking?
Well, you know, these ceasefires are always a little messy. And sometimes the guys at the lower level aren't communicating with the guys at the top level. Sometimes people make mistakes. But even when the ceasefire is holding, as we've seen, not just in Iran, but all over the world, sometimes these things have little flare-ups. I think our approach has been to enforce the ceasefire, to defend ourselves when fired upon. The president's been very clear that if we're fired upon, we're going to fire back. But if you compare the conflict now to where it was 5-6 weeks ago, I think the president's ceasefire is very much old, and also the question of enrichment. So, you know, we're going back and forth with them. We do think they're negotiating, at least so far, in good faith, and we're making some progress. Hopefully we'll continue to make progress. The president will be in a position where he can endorse the agreement, but obviously that's still TBD. That's why we have verification processes in place. I will say, this is my last comment on this, if you look at what we've already accomplished here, assuming that we're able to get to a final agreement here, we're reopening the Straits of Hormuz, we've already decimated their conventional military, and we're in a position where we could substantially set back their nuclear program, not just during the term of this president, but over the long term. That's a very, very good thing for the American people.
And it has only been a few weeks, but we can already feel a strong wind of change across Hungary. And you, dear Peter, are sending to the world powerful messages. With your swearing in on the Europe Day and the sound of the European anthem, and with the European colors once again flying proudly over the Hungarian parliament, These are symbols that a new era is beginning for Hungary and small and medium enterprises, just to name a few. We have agreed now on a safe and solid lending zone. And therefore, subject to the reforms that are being adopted and investments implemented, I'm very happy to announce today that we can unlock 10 billion euros for Hungary. My third point is there's also a significant progress on the topic of cohesion funds. With the progress on the super milestones, we have also been able to unlock the conditionality-related cohesion funds worth 4.2 billion euros. And my fourth point is on fundamental rights. We have also made great progress on the protection of fundamental rights in Hungary, notably on academic freedom. Hungary will gradually phase out the public interest trust, the PITS, and pass legislation to address concerns about conflict of interest and integrity rules. This is a big step forward, long awaited, the academic freedom, and therefore this will unlock another 2.2 billion euros of cohesion funds for Hungary.
În continuare, așa tot cum am spus în mai devreme, pentru a angaja o țintă aeriană este nevoie de un anumit timp care presupune detecție, identificare, clasificare, luarea deciziei pentru combatere și angajarea acesteia. Timpul la dispoziție pe care l-am avut, 4 minute, a fost extrem de scurt.
Domnule general, am avut o dronă rusă, Gheran 2, plecată din Rusia, cunoaștem traiectoria, cunoaștem pe unde a trecut prin Ucraina, cunoaștem pe unde a intrat în România, parte dintr-un roi de 43 de drone rusești, din care doar una a ajuns pe teritoriul român. În această situație, consulul general al Federației Ruse la Constanța a fost declarat persoana non grata și consulatul general al Rusiei, al Federației Ruse la Constanța se va închide.
Welcome to the skiff. Do you remember back during the Iran-Iraq war, the Iraq war time frame, then Afghanistan or vice versa? And I think it was it Richard Pearl that came out and said next, as in the next war? Where? Well, we're to that point next. Who's next? Is it Cuba? It looks like that may be it. It looks like the war in Iran is winding down. And we're looking for the next war, and we still got one going on in Ukraine, which is getting worse, and we're going to talk about that today. I want to say hello to the crew in the chat. You're cleared hot. Check out onefinger.com, great aggregator site. Ursula Ursula von der Leyen, who reminds me of Frau Farbissina, actually. I mean, she is the splitting image of the EU Nazi underlying tendencies that's happening there. Hungary has fallen, by the way. It's over. They are implementing all, she calls it academic freedom. Of course, it's LGBT, transgender, DEI, all of this stuff that's being put into the schools in Hungary, and Christian Hungary has fallen. It's a shame to see. And the EU wants war with Russia, big time war. They want a big time war. This is getting worse. We're going to talk about that in Ukraine with Alex from Kiev in the second hour. I've got Willie Laura at the top or in the third segment today to talk about what's going on in Cuba. A lot to go through there and all over Latin America. So much to go through today. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Got a lot to get through today. Stay with us on The Skiff.
Nuclear wasn't a product that was developed and to sell, really. What it really was a journey to get me well after my experience trying to immigrate and get married to an American citizen in order to go for to get my green card. Towards the end, they send you for a medical, and that's where they sat me down and gave me 16 vaccines in one sitting. At the time, I knew when I was going through it that it's probably not good, but I didn't realize that I'm about to go through the worst health experience of my life. And that's when I went on this journey and understand that nutrition is actually your medicine. I've always heard the old people say your food's in your garden, but we didn't get it. And your body is always trying to heal itself. I mean, you know, when you cut yourself in a couple of days, it heals. And that is the process of homeostasis. Your body is always trying to, every cell in your body is always healing itself. And just like anything, if you bake a cake or you build a house, you need the right ingredients to achieve the result. Now, if you don't have the correct nutrition and you're not eating the correct food, it's like trying to build a house without bricks. Now, a lot of people, they say, what does nuclear do? Nuclear itself does nothing. It's not designed to do anything. Your body does the work. It gives your body all the things it needs balanced in, and it works together to deliver the correct nutritional supplement that you need as a human being to function normally.
It's finally here, our second annual mega sale. This sale only comes around once a year, so take advantage of the best offers ever while you can. For example, save 50% on our Giza Dream bed sheets, as low as $29.98. And for the first time ever on TV, MyPillow mattresses and MyPillow mattress toppers, as low as $99.98. And you save 50% on our Luxpure six-piece towel sets, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And our best-selling standard MyPillows, regular $49.98, on sale for $17.98. Wait on it, mega sale only $14.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use this promo code to take advantage of our second annual mega sale. But wait, there's more. To make the mega sale even more special, when you order right now, your order's going to ship absolutely free.
Okay, welcome back to The Skiff. We're going to have Willie Lohr on at the bottom of the hour. He's going to come in and talk about everything Latin America, Hispanic community, Cuba, the next war, what's going on across the zone, and what's happening at CDM Espanol. I'm really concerned about this war in Russia, though, in Ukraine. In the second hour, we've got Alex from Kiev. Pavlovsk was just lost in Donbass, which is the distribution logistical center in East Ukraine that Russia just took completely. And you've heard no word of that in the media. So all of this is really disturbing. And the EU is threatening Russia. And Medvedev came out, the former president of Russia, today and said, look, you know, well, let's read what he said exactly. And I'll just tell you what he said. Let me find that 1 second. Actually, I think I disappeared it. All right, we'll come back to that. I'll come back to Medvedev. But essentially, he said that EU capitals need to be worried and the people of Europe need to see that the EU leaders have pushed them into a war with Russia. So this is very serious. We don't want this to continue, and we're going to continue screaming at the rooftops of what's happening in Europe and in Ukraine. Let's talk about a few stories, however. Russian drone strike hits Romanian apartment building. There was a attack on a Ukrainian port city of Izmail across the Danube River from Romania. That's the river that snakes up through the Balkans up into Ukraine and from the Black Sea. And then I guess Russia was attacking a city in Ukraine, and one of the drones, it looks like errant drone, this not be confirmed completely, but looks like one of the Russian drones went across the border and hit a Romanian apartment building. The Romanians were not able to shoot it down, which is very, very interesting. So escalation here, not intentional, but escalation nonetheless. Of course, you can go down and see van der Leyen's comments. Russia's war of aggression has crossed yet another line. A Russian drone incursion struck a densely populated area in Romania, injuring civilians on EU territory. We stand in full solidarity with Romania and its people as we continue strengthening our security and deterrence, especially on our eastern border. We will keep increasing the pressure on Russia. We are preparing our 21st package of sanctions. So they're continuing the pressure on Russia, as her words say. And what does that mean? It means that Russia is not going to take it laying down and is threatening EU capitals at this point with attacks. So Ursula von der Leyen, by the way, is not elected. She is appointed in that position by the European Commission, I believe. And so the EU is falling under a Fourth Reich tyranny. This is essentially what we've been saying for some time. And those in Europe have their scales over their eyes and are not willing to see it. But that is what's happening, in the people of Europe are being slowly but surely moved into a slavery system. Tough to see. You know, our heritage, tough to see. My heritage is English and German, Scottish, and it's tough to see these people not willing to have the will to survive, essentially. And again, she reminds me of Frau Farbissina in Austin Powers, essentially. She is the Nazi taskmaster there in Europe. All right, let's move to the next story. The oil markets are really under pressure, and it's not from the oil. The problem is it's not being moved. So you've got all this oil that is sitting in all these tanks, and the storage levels are bursting in some places, but in other places, the storage levels are very low. And we don't, because it's not moving into Europe, et cetera, the UK. So when you have this situation, the markets can get to a point where there's just not enough flow to maintain the system. It's kind of like the human body. If your blood pressure gets too low, then your body doesn't work right because the flow needs to be there. So all of this infrastructure has to have flow to keep it stable and ability to continue working. So this is a real problem with the oil markets. They're saying we're months away from a complete collapse of the oil system across Europe and other places. Of course, the U.S. is very safe with all our oil from Venezuela under our own ground, and we're selling LNG, natural gas. So this could be good for America, but it's fascinating to watch because all of this has follow-on implications with fertilizer, plastics, and possible famine in certain areas. Is this engineered or not? It's something Michael Yan, who's been on our program many times, has talked about extensively. But this is something to watch as well, which is the oil crisis and the crisis in the oil markets themselves. This is kind of crazy. If you watched Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin test flight last night at Cape Canaveral, let's just watch that so you can see what I'm talking about here. That is one hell of an explosion. Look at that. Wow. Billions of dollars going up in smoke. Just incredible. Incredible. So his whole new competition for Starlink is under pressure, of course. He was, I think it's called Leo, but he was in the process of putting up all these new satellites, and now all of that is on hold. It has impact on the Department of War and its programs. I think Artemis is one of them. So this was a serious event, and it's going to be interesting to see actually what happened. And we're going to stay on that story and let you know what happened when we get more information. But big thing happening at Cape Canaveral. On the Georgia Record, our Georgia paper, we have an article, President Trump dropped some truth on Robert E. Lee, talking about the true history of Robert E. Lee, but in a response by Dwight Eisenhower, why he had Robert E. Lee's picture in his office. And so Trump posted this. I find this interesting because Trump has been vocal about Robert E. Lee for some time. It's been pretty consistent about that. And, you know, Lee was a Christian. I'll just read this. His faith profoundly shaped his character, decisions, and legacy, a lifelong Episcopalian. He became from a family with varying levels of religious commitment, but he developed a deeper, more personal fervor in middle age, particularly after personal losses. Attended church regularly, read the Bible daily for guidance and strength, and began each day with prayer. His Christianity was practiced in every day, emphasizing duty, humility, and trust in God's providence rather than abstract theology. So I find this fascinating. You know, the Southern culture and Robert E. Lee have been demonized in general over the slavery issue. This man was a leader, well-respected by his troops. Most of his 99% of his troops were poor farmers who were just protecting their way of life and their land from an invasion of the North. And the war really wasn't about slavery. It was about control, economic control. Anyone with a tinge of honesty will understand that or say that. And so I find this fascinating that Trump is posting on Robert E. Lee. Really interesting. All right, one more. Larry Fink wants your money. The owner of BlackRock says that in the American Workers Summit or whatever this was, where he's training 15,000 more men and women, blue-collar jobs, electricians for his data centers. He's building out Texas in one huge data center. And he's not worried about roads, bridges, airports, education, et cetera. He's worried about his data centers. And he's saying, you know what, we're going to possibly need your 401k and your pension to build out our data centers. So give us your pensions to invest in AI or else the Chinese will win. And this is the tactic that's been going on for some time. I love the writing of this blog from Armageddon Prose. Current Sith overlord and aspirational emperor of the galaxy. Just a few false flags and manufactured crises away from assuming the throne. Larry Fink recently appeared at something billed as National Skilled Trades Day, hosted by Texas State Technical College in Waco to recruit the electricians he needs to complete the destruction of his AI Death Star. All right, so that's all the stories I wanted to bring to your attention. Cuba's out there. Ukraine's out there. We're going to talk about it all at length. I've got Willie Laura coming on here in a second, and then Alex at the top of the hour, direct from Kiev, to talk about Pokrovsk have fallen, as well as other areas on the Eastern Front, what's going on in Ukraine, and just a lot to go through. So stay with us. We'll be right back on the skiff. Don't go anywhere.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest Made in America sale ever. We just put huge discounts on products made right here in the USA. My Pillow bed pillows, body pillows, go anywhere pillows, bolster pillows, all made with my patented adjustable fill. Mattresses, mattress toppers, mattress pads, adjustable bed frames, mattress foundations, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. And now we're expanding our USA products beyond just quality sleep. Like the Cross I wear every day, now available in both men's and women's. We even have USA made socks. And are you tired of being tired? Try our new health beverage, Rev 7. Or how about my coffee, the greatest coffee ever? So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use this promo code to get deep discounts on all these products. Plus, for a limited time, your order ships absolutely free.
Divorce is tough, but your finances don't have to be. I'm David Cross, and I'm a certified divorce financial analyst practitioner. My job is to help you get a fair financial settlement in your divorce and to guide you to smarter money decisions. Find out how we can help you. U.S. Asset Management. It's your money.
A warm welcome here at the National Press Club. Welcome to the journalists, welcome to the Ember team, and welcome to the other guests that we have here. I'm going to announce, and as some of you guessed it right when they came in, the first E2 order by an American operator. And that operator is a fellow. We believe this is really a strategic shift to unlock profitability for the customer. I'm very pleased that we have Andrew Levy here as the CEO of Avello, and I'm very pleased to give the stage to share a little bit more about what Avello is going to do with the E2-195. Thank you very much.
Couldn't be more excited to be here as part of this historic announcement. We have such a great cultural fit as companies. So we're very, very excited to be Embraer's newest customer. We launched our airline in April of 21, and our target is focusing on small secondary airports of large metro areas. We've carried over 8 million customers since we started on 63,000 flights. And we've done all these things with 1,200 of the greatest crew members I could ever imagine having. And many of them are here with me today. This is the right airplane for us. It's going to open up opportunities for us that no other aircraft can serve. The best thing about the airplane, of course, is you will not find a middle seat on this airplane. It doesn't exist. We won't have any to offer. It's going to be the best cabin in the United States, and we're so excited about that. This is going to elevate our experience to the highest level, and we think our customers are absolutely going to love the airplane.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret, silver wings.
Okay, welcome back to the skiff. A lot going on today. I've got Willie Laura coming up here in a second. Got Alex direct from Kiev in the second hour to talk about what's going on in Europe. Really scary situation developing with the Russians and the European Union. As we've said many times, they want a war in Europe, and they're pushing for it as hard as possible. So not a good situation. But we've got another one probably boiling down in the Caribbean. And I want to talk to our good friend Willie Laura, who runs our CDM Espanol channel. And we're going to get the scoop on what's going on in Latin America. Willie, thanks for coming on this morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
All right, man. A busy, busy day. So do we have another conflict coming off the Florida coast? Yeah.
You know, what we think is like the president's put in plenty of pressure, not only militarily, but also economically. There's a lot of conversations going on. The director of the CIA went down to Cuba, met with the head of intelligence over there. Met with some of the Raul's relative, especially grandkids, and the godson was actually doing a lot of the talking with the State Department. So I think the president is putting maximum pressure. I believe that we have not seen what's going on the street in Cuba in many, many, many years. Basically, having people not care anymore about the repression, being out there on the street, protesting. So the situation is dire in the island. And I think the pressure is building for the Cuban leadership to actually make a decision pretty soon, because the president is not playing games. He's putting all the cards. He has a lot of oxygen on his table. Mm-hmm. The Secretary of War has put that on him. The SATCOM and the SAFCON, they've been working on a plan for many, many years. So I think the president has a lot of cards on his hands right now. And what we're seeing coming out of Cuba is the same rhetoric as usual. You know, come down, you know, there's going to be a lot of blood and bloodshed and blah, blah, blah. We all know how that works.
Yeah, we've seen it over and over. The Iran things back and forth every hour almost as to it's over, it's not over, it's over. So is there someone in Cuba that could like take the position of what is it, Delcy down in Venezuela, like could take over and do Trump's bidding for him?
Yeah, there's several people that can do the work. But the problem, the difference between Venezuela and Cuba is we're talking about 67 years. Of you know, dictatorship in an island. So it's kind of hard to find somebody that you can say he's totally going to work with us. There's several people. There's some names that are floating around. There's some other people also that might be interested to see that line of people in South Florida, because they haven't been in Cuba, or they haven't been there in a very long time. Some of the names that I heard in conversations are from people that they grew up in Miami. They've never been to Cuba, but they're part of the Cuban leadership. In Miami. So there's some names going out there. I think the president would like to work with somebody within the island. It's my understanding that can actually look at the United States as a real partner in getting rid of the leadership. But there's a lot of names that are floating around as possibilities.
So you know that if Cuba falls and there's a new government, we're going to have to put in a CDM Espanol bureau down there. For sure.
you bet that that's going to happen right away. That's something that we will definitely have. And what's going on in Cuba is actually a shot across the bow to governments like Mexico and Sheinbaum and also Nicaragua, which is not, you know, Nicaragua, we know where it's been for many, many years, but he's not strategically as big a problem as Cuba. Remember that now with the exports of oil from the United States, especially from the Gulf of America, coming out of Texas, a lot of those ships, they go through the Florida Strait between Cuba and the United States, which is only 90 miles. And we don't want to, you know, we don't have any problems with that. You know, if we continue to export oil, and obviously there's something that the military is looking at seriously in terms of, you know, contingency plans and stuff like that. So there's a lot going on. But yeah, Nicaragua and Mexico, especially, they've been back and forth with the president of Mexico in terms of how the U.S. is cooperating and fighting the cartels. And, you know, those are some of the priorities. But what's going on in Cuba is going to change a lot of the dynamic in the region that has been affected by, you know, for many, many years in terms of their policy exporting terrorism. And, you know, those sorts of things will end. Mm-hmm. And we saw the influence of Cuba and the government of Venezuela. How, you know, Cuba were saying that we don't have any military people and have anything in Venezuela. And then obviously the entire security apparatus of Maduro, they're from Cuba. Yeah. So a lot of stuff will change if the leadership collapse.
Let's do a round robin. What's going on in Honduras? I mean, there's issues with the presidential change. I mean, what's your take on what's happening?
I think that the new president is somebody that is working. It's a fairly new government. They picked up a lot of problems from the Xiomara government, the past socialist government that they had. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to do the work. The Congress is actually doing a lot of great work in the hands of Tommy Zambrano, the head of the assembly, the Congress. But the president still have lots of challenges. I think that his team is good. They could do a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But a lot of pressure, and his style of leadership is like, okay, I got a lot of people to talk to me. I just can do what I, you know, basically what I want. But they're doing the work. Let's see what happens in the next 6 months. But it's too early to say. They're fixing a lot of problems. There's some internal issues that they're dealing with. But you know, they'll come on the other side. The young leadership of the party and the government is doing some really good work.
What about the DR? You spend a lot of time down there. I used to trade with a lot of those banks. I mean, what's happening? What interesting island? And I want to talk to you about Haiti too. But what's going on in the DR?
Well, the Dominican Republic will play a role in what happens in Cuba. I think there was part of the conversation with the alliance that what they did in Miami when they had that summit with some of the countries in Latin America, including the Dominican Republic, when they talked about pushing China out of the region, the conflict with Venezuela, and what's going on. With Cuba, the Dominican Republic play a role. They're using their military bases. The U.S. was using their military bases to launch operations in Venezuela, and it's also another staging ground in terms of Cuba, as well as Puerto Rico. So I think it'll play a role. The Dominican Republic has a stable government so far, and the U.S. has been having really good conversation and cooperation between the two governments. So I think in that end, the Dominican Republic doesn't have a lot of problems right now.
And I know you're not French, but what's the situation between Haiti and the DR? I mean, it's kind of a demarcation.
It's always been an issue. And right now, the main issue is immigration, legal immigration, kind of like the same issue we had here. In the past administration, you know, there's some folks that will like, especially the guys on the left, that they work with the past U.S. administration and trying to unite the island, which is a huge mistake. I think it's horrible that if they do that. And also what the government is doing right now is trying to protect the border and seal it. It's a tough issue for the Dominican Republic because they're two different cultures. They don't assimilate, and you know, it's not like we're talking about Mexico and Costa Rica and Costa Rica and Panama. So it's a two different culture altogether. So the issue is being, how do you protect the border, especially with the crisis that are going on in Haiti that doesn't spill into the Dominican Republic, and how they protect their borders and some of the social programs. So that's been part of the conversation. There's some concern in terms of like how weapons going back and forth, going into the gangs in running Haiti, and some of the drug trade that is happening also on the border. So The military is there, and the president is being pretty clear in terms of like, you guys need to stay over there. We're doing the best that we can in helping Haiti, but there's only so much the country can do because their economy is strong, but it's not strong enough to support both countries on the same island.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I may be going down to Haiti because there's a lot going on down there. I think the administration is very focused on that. Panama, Chinese influence, is it waning? Is it increasing? What's going on?
Well, I think that with the whole thing with the canal at the beginning, with the president, what he did actually tempered down a lot of the influence that China was having. Remember that for the U.S., it became a clear national security problem having the Chinese government control two of the main ports in both ends of the canal. You know, in case of any crisis, the Chinese only had to sink a couple of boats and the canal will be sealed. You know, they were not going to be able to get any of the U.S. military ships through the canal. They have to get through, you know, down south. You know, it was a very poor decision of the past administration, how they dealt with the Panama and the influence of China. Obviously, they didn't pay attention to it. And the president came in and said, you know, this is bad. We cannot do that. We need to change it. And I think they actually been working with the U.S. lately and trying to just tamper down the influence of China in the canal. And I think they've been successful, in that end.
What do you know anything about that? Some ship that just like ran aground. Was that the Suez or was it the Panama where it ran aground?
I think it was a Suez.
Yeah. I always thought that was like a Chinese, like, we can shut this down if we want to. Just saying.
That was a big concern because, you know, if they sink a ship in the middle of the canal, there's not going to be any traffic. It's going to take a very long time to get them out of the way. So part of the negotiation with that, when the canal was getting back to Panama, was like, we'll be able to take it back whenever we want if it presents a national security threat to the U.S. And that's what was going on.
Yeah, people don't realize the history. The U.S. Army used to have huge operations down there.
Oh, yeah.
The canal, they had like smoke screens they would set up, like fires along the canal, all this kind of stuff. So it's a big deal, and it's probably going to be a big deal in the future.
Yeah, and we built it. We built it for a purpose, a merchant, and also for national security.
Yeah. Argentina fascinates me. Is Milei going to be in power? I mean, what's your gut tell you there?
Well, the left is going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Milei is actually putting rules and getting the country back in her feet. It was that they had the worst hyperinflation in history during the past administration. It's a good thing they got rid of it. Mm-hmm. And he's going to take some time to level it out. I think he's done great work in such a short time in terms of turning the economy around.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the left doesn't like that. The communists and socialists are on the street protesting because they want to continue to get the freebies from left and right, with an economy that is actually recuperating right now. Yeah. So Milei he's going to be steadfast. He's going to be doing what he's doing. And he wants to have a legacy of turning Argentina back into what it used to be many years ago, which was like Argentina was like the country in Europe that actually was in South America. It's a beautiful country. And just, they just ran it to the ground. And he's just bringing it back, which is great.
I don't follow it that close, but I see these headlines from time to time that he's losing support or he may be pushed out politically. You don't see any risk of that?
I don't think so. You know, you obviously remember the media in some of these countries are controlled by the left. The same thing happened in Spain, the same thing we see here in the U.S. So they're actually not going to be telling the folks that he's doing a great job. You know, you just have to do a little deeper and make sure the understanding of what is actually going on. The media, unfortunately, we deal with this all the time. You and I see it. It's not a reference right now in terms of like getting real information. Most of it's propaganda.
In Spain, and then I want to talk Venezuela, but Spain has been conspicuously globalist. You think that government will stay in power as well?
Well, it's a different way to doing elections in Spain. Actually, they manipulated the whole process to have this guy in power. It's just like, it's horrible. You know, the majority of people did not vote for him. It was just kind of like placed there in a way, but they can't stand it. They can't be that way for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Spain has been an ally for so many, many years to the U.S., but the situation with the economy, security, immigration, like how they open their borders and actually in Spain in some way is unrecognizable. Yeah. So people are just getting tired. You're seeing the videos every day. If you go on, you know, you go to any of the social media apps, and you can see how people are in Barcelona, in Tenerife, the Canary Islands, they're really tired because they've been overwhelmed, overrun. Mm-hmm. And their service is the same thing. You see it every day. And I look at it, I'm like, I don't know what's going on in Spain. You know, I've been there many, many times. I was like, I don't want to go back. You know, it's unsafe. It's very unsafe to be there right now.
Yeah, it's sad. Venezuela, last one.
Venezuela, well, we saw that the guy who was hiding the money for Maduro actually was picked up by the U.S. and sent back to here. So there's changes happening. I think
is that the Alex Saab guy case?
The Alex Saab, yeah. He used to be the Testaferro, what they call the guy, money guy.
Yeah.
And he's back in the U.S. He's in prison. So I think those are really good news. And the changes will continue. And there's going to be an election. I don't think it's going to happen this year. There's still so much going on. They need to get rid of Diosdado Cabello, which is a guy who ran all the security apparatus, did all the torture and all the killings and all that. He's still around. I don't think he's going to be, unless he gives himself up, I don't think he's going to be extradited or anything like that. The U.S. is probably going to have to send a Hellfire missile and send an example, as they did with the Iranian guy out there, and they said just send a missile and just pulverize him. Mm-hmm. I think that's at the end what's going to happen with this guy. The head of the military, you know, was taken out of the position. He's doing something else. He's negotiating to go probably to Turkey or someplace like that. No. Now they're dismantling that thing, but they're allowing Delcy Rodriguez to be part of the transition. They're negotiating. She doesn't want to be in prison, which is probably where she needs to be. But sometimes we got to deal with some of these actors to make sure that we get some things done and bring Venezuela back to where it was. You know, having a country that is the richest oil country in the entire region and not having power. There's no power in the island. There's no gas, which is insane. It's really bad. So hopefully they'll be able to continue to negotiate, get rid of these people, bring election next year, have a new government, open up some things, get rid of the political prisoner, just release everybody, locked up some of the bad apples. And I think the country and the people in the country itself, they'd be able to take care of a lot of these really bad apples and bad people that they've been out there running torture centers and all that. They're going to have to run because the people are really tired of it.
Yeah, they'll get their own medicine.
Yes.
What's going on with CDM Espanol?
Well, actually, we're doing great things. It's like now the World Cup is coming. I'm in Houston. We're going to be covering that. We're going to continue to cover Latin America, you know, Cuba, all the issues that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is relevant. We're just one of the few outlets in Spanish that are actually covering those issues in depth and unbiased and actually trying to tell people how things are actually happening. All the facts. Let them make up their own minds. But we try to maintain a really clean, unbiased news outlet for the Latin America, for the United States, all in Spanish.
Outstanding. Look forward to it. And I have a vision of you in one of those 57 Chevys down in Havana, man.
Well, I'll send you the picture. I've been one of them in some of my visits out in Cuba, but I want to go now because it's going to be interesting that being there, when I was at CNN, that I was going two or three times a year to Cuba and seeing it the way it was, it's going to be so much different and interesting to see it when the regime collapses and there's going to be a new government and things are popping up in Cuba. Well, I'm excited about that.
All of that is going to flow up into Florida too, because all the tourism, all of that is going to come back. I mean, if you go to Tampa, it's fascinating what used to be there.
Yes.
So,
and I think at the end, you know, obviously everything's not going to come in at once in Cuba, but things are going to move up and there's going to be a lot of investment made, a lot of business opportunities, and the island is just going to explode. I think it's going to be a direct competition to the Dominican Republic in terms of tourism.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that kind of competition is actually healthy for the island and for the region.
I agree, Willie. Thank you so much, man. Have you back soon.
Thanks, man.
All right, John. All right,
cheers.
For the first time ever, we're bringing you My Pillow mattresses and mattress toppers for as low as $99.98. Remember, sleep's all about temperature and pressure points. Whatever sleep needs you have, we have the right technology for you. Like our MyPillow mattress topper, our queen size has over 10,000 individual comfort supports to help relieve your pressure points. And how about our 3-inch hybrid plus mattress topper? It's infused with copper and silver to help your body get the restorative sleep it needs. and our MyPillow and Case Coil mattresses. I personally helped develop these mattresses to make sure they have everything needed to give us great sleep. Plus, they're made right here in the USA, and they ship right to your front door absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use this promo code to get MyPillow mattresses and toppers for as low as $99.98 and free shipping.
I'm watching my friends gain more and more weight. And then eventually, I got to tell you, this is a little dark, but a bad diet literally killed my whole crew.
Wow.
Diabetes, a stroke. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's like you had a stroke. You're not even 50 years old. You guys got to quit eating this stuff. Your body knows what's what. You're not conscious of this. But that's why people will go to the refrigerator and they'll grab this and that and the other and put together this outrageously elaborate combination of foods. Your body's trying to reach balance. Unbeknownst to us, our bodies are always trying to reach homeostasis. You can't eat all of this stuff and expect to live a long time. And one thing led to another, and I went, you know, forget this. We're going to make our own product. So we partnered with one of the world's top three biochemists where nutrition-specific study is concerned. I said, all I want is the best nutritional and immune support product in the world. So we mix it in yogurt. It's a powder. I got a bag of it here. I keep one on the console all the time, you know, just so I can show people.
Yeah.
And it's a powder. Now, this is not candy. This is hardcore nutrition. And sugar is an enemy. And most people do not know that the reason these bellies are showing up on people all over the place, your body makes fat to store the toxins it can't get rid of. So it just puts them over here. But I can tell you this. You take this for 30 days and then lay off of it for 2 or 3 days, and you'll go, good grief, give me some more. Skin, nails, hair growing back. Cut yourself and it heals in half the time.
Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man. He'll test one day. Have him win.
Welcome back to the Skiff. We've got Alex coming at the top of the hour to talk about what's happening in Ukraine at Pavlogrodsk and the not good news coming out of Europe. So a solemn day today, but there's just a lot of bad stuff happening. While we wait for Alex, we're going to listen to Dr. Victory, Kelly Victory, talk about possible cure for cancer with ivermectin. So here we go.
We're lucky to have back with us on the show Dr. Kelly Victory. She's been on the show many times, but I saw a post she put out recently on possible drug shortages, especially with what's going on in the Persian Gulf with the supply chains being cut off. Dr. Victory, what was your theory behind that?
Welcome well, thanks back. As always. Thanks as always for having me, Todd. My theory is this: there has been a long, long, standing over reliance on China and to a lesser extent India for our pharmaceuticals here in the United States. More than 90% of all prescription drugs or their active ingredients are sourced from China. And this is a huge national security threat. We have simply got to refurbish our moribund manufacturing capabilities in the U.S. for drugs. In the meantime, however, because that's going to take quite some time, even with great effort, we really are at risk for supply chain disruptions. And it takes something as, quote, small as what's going on in the Middle East and, the delay in shipping and those sorts of things that could potentially cause a massive problem in drug supply. It's one of the reasons that we really at the Wellness Company have focused on manufacturing these medications in the U.S. Because, as I said, this is a huge national security threat.
So we saw this during COVID. Have we not learned our lesson? Have we made any progress?
We really haven't made a lot of progress. There simply hasn't been a lot of focus on it. I brought this to the attention of administrations over the past 20 years, as I said, because of the national security issue. Think about this. We are outsourcing medications to our greatest geopolitical foe. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, it's one thing to buy a t-shirt or a bobble for your garden from China. When you're talking about your blood pressure medication, your child's asthma medication, diabetes medications, this is potentially a disaster.
Well, we're going to stay on that story. I want to switch real quick because you guys released a study recently talking about ivermectin and mebendazole. I can never say that together and their treatment and effect on cancer. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. It's really exciting stuff. We have been looking at, we meaning scientists, have been looking at over a period of decades, the application of repurposed drugs for cancer, in large part because chemotherapy is such a toxic brew for many people, and it doesn't have that great a track record in terms of killing and keeping cancers from returning. Interestingly, this group of anti-parasitic drugs, and that's what both ivermectin and mebendazole are. They were initially developed to treat parasites, worms, and other sorts of things like that. But interestingly, parasites share in common with cancer a similar way of replicating, growing, and reproducing. And it turns out that these same anti-parasitic drugs have a profound effect on cancer, and not just a single cancer, many, many different types of cancers. And they do this without killing off good cells the way that chemotherapy does. So rather than decimating your immune system, leaving you potentially with heart damage and neuropathy and all of the other things that chemotherapy is fraught with, this class of drugs, if in fact it is as powerful and effective as we think it might be, could be a total game changer for people with cancer. The study that we did was an observational study and therefore has, you know, significant limitations because of the study design. But we looked at just under 200 patients, 197 patients, who were taking a combination of ivermectin and mebendazole and over a period of months. And lo and behold, 84% of them, Todd, reported a positive outcome. 48% had either complete remission of their cancer, no evidence of cancer, or regression of their cancer. Another 36% had their cancer not progressed, stayed the same, and only 15% had any progression of their cancer at all. Now, obviously, because of the study design and the fact that some people may have been doing chemo or radiation or other therapies, we can't say definitively that this proves that this medication combination cures cancer. But at a minimum, it is overwhelmingly compelling data that should motivate a lot of money to get into a large, well-controlled study so that we can really understand this.
I read somewhere that there were studies previously that showed this, but they were kind of covered up. Do you know anything about that? I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, I know a lot about it, and you are exactly right. This is not new. There have been decades worth of research on this. In the veterinary world, ivermectin has commonly been used to treat cancer, including breast cancer in dogs. I had it, my own Labrador Retriever 12 years ago developed breast cancer, and the drug they put her on was ivermectin. It is, there are hundreds and hundreds of studies out there over a period, as I said, going back decades, that show very promising results. But this is scientific facts. These facts have been suppressed largely, I believe, because Big Pharma doesn't stand to make any money from these things, where they make tremendous amounts from chemotherapy and from, you know, immune approaches to cancer. So again, if we were able to prove definitively that these very safe, very inexpensive, well-tolerated drugs could be repurposed in the treatment of cancer, it would be a complete game changer.
Wow. Wow. That's, we're going to stay on top of that. That's, it's fascinating. And a lot of people still don't know about this, right?
I think most people don't. And in fact, really, we get significant pushback from people associated, as you might expect, with Big Pharma. But I am really surprised and perplexed at the vitriol that we get online when we posted our study or when we talk about how exciting it is that ivermectin could actually cure cancer, or that the combination of these drugs could cure cancer. The pushback you get from lay people who just don't want to hear it, the very mention of the word ivermectin, and I think it got tarred with a heavy brush because of COVID, the idea that it's horse-paced, when the reality is ivermectin has been FDA approved for use in humans for decades. It goes back to the early 1980s. It is incredibly safe. It's taken by hundreds of millions of people around the globe every year. It's over the counter in almost every country other than the US and Canada. Mm-hmm. It really has a safety profile far, far better than something like Tylenol. Mm-hmm. And you have to take a tremendous amount of it to get toxic. So I would think that people would be absolutely clamoring for more data, very, very interested in this. But the pushback is somewhat surprising. And I really do believe it's because of how successful the propaganda campaigns are against these sorts of things. We had our own FDA, you'll recall, during COVID, posting, you know, you're not a horse, you're not a cow, stop it. You know, don't take ivermectin. It couldn't be more disingenuous.
Is there been any accountability for that? I mean, that's criminal, right?
For that specific thing, yes, a class action suit was brought against the FDA and they were forced to take down that post. They did it very quietly. It was quite surreptitious. It didn't get a lot of press, as you might imagine. But the reality is, this is not new information. It's been out there. There are more than 12 different mechanisms of action by which ivermectin alone is successful in prohibiting the growth and replication and spread of cancer. 12 mechanisms. I mentioned the one that it shares.
Every day, your data is being tracked, collected, and sold, often without you even realizing it. Big tech companies control your devices, your apps, and the information you share. From your messages to your browsing habits, everything is being monitored and stored. Over time, we've traded privacy for convenience, and most people don't even question it. But what if you could take that control back? That's where Mark 37 comes in. Mark 37 provides privacy-focused phones, laptops, and tablets designed to give you full control over your digital life. With secure systems, expert support, and simple tools, they make it easier to step away from constant tracking and data collection. Because privacy isn't just a feature, it's a fundamental choice. It's about protecting your data, your freedom, and your future. Take back control of your digital life with Mark 37.
The pandemic, we can never be caught unprepared again. And so many Americans, when COVID hit, they had nothing in the house. Stores were shut down, and doctor's offices were shut down, and even if doctors prescribe drugs, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, pharmacists wouldn't fill the prescriptions. That was a nightmare.
Now the situation is much worse. We have these horrible supply chain problems. In our emergency medical kit at the wellness company, we have 8 prescription drugs that are all potentially life-saving.
Most people have died with COVID. They died in the hospital because they didn't receive early treatment.
Every American family should have one of these.
I can tell you the Wellness Company kit is the answer.
With my 35 years of experience, our team at US Asset Management can deliver professional investment management, financial planning to help you target your goals, and even specialized divorce financial analysis if you need it. We are here to help you make better decisions with your money. Call US Asset Management today and let's get to work in your financial future.
Okay, welcome back to the SCIF. Really interesting stuff on ivermectin. We're going to stay on that and continue to bring you the truth in medicine, which you're not going to get from anywhere else. Just think of it, for 30 years or more, they've known that ivermectin helps stop cancer growth, and you haven't heard about it. Why is that? Not good, people. Not good at all. We got to bring truth. We got to save humanity. All right, speaking of saving humanity, we have a genocide going on in East Europe, and it's in Ukraine. The war is continuing. It's escalating, and we've got the guy to talk about it. I'm going to bring on Alex now from Ukraine. Alex, thank you for joining me, man.
Hello, Ted.
So what's happening? We've kind of taken our eye off the ball, but more territory is being lost in Donbass. Tell us about that.
Well, we are in the fifth year of this ethnocidal war. Mm-hmm. Fifth year. Nobody could believe. 4 years ago, nobody could believe this. And
but you've been right. You've been telling me for a long time it's going to go on and on and on.
Yes, and from my observation, this is the fifth wave of escalation caused by external actors outside of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And the current wave of escalation is meant, is forecasted for the summer. I mean, we are at the end of May. So both sides declared that there would be offensive operation. Russia declared that there would be offensive operation on Zaporizhia and Donetsk, and it is forecasted that the new operation would eventually target Kyiv. And asymmetrically enough, Syrsky, General Commander Syrsky, declared that Ukraine will commence offensive operation on Donetsk region in June. So I guess what is going on?
Yeah. Does Ukraine have the ability to do that? The military capability to do that?
I haven't heard about any of additional supply of weapons and arms in the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. As you may have heard, the United States stopped supply in August of last year. Mm-hmm. However, the European Union countries supplied unknown amounts of calibers and weaponry to Ukraine. I don't know the numbers. So I guess that there are some numbers of weapons for the offensive operations, but just 2 weeks ago, the mobilization efforts have been intensified in Ukraine. The private bounty hunters simply raid each city, each village in Ukraine. My friends who are men within the drafting age, they simply have to sit down at home, and their women or their mothers go to buy groceries and food. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends even had to escape from the bounty hunters riding a bike. Mm. And when he went to buy bread in a food market, a shop attendant hit him behind the counter.
Really?
Bounty hunters, yeah, tried to get him.
Wow.
So I'm looking at videos in the internet. I haven't sent you those mobilization kidnapping videos lately, but
there's plenty of them there.
The aggression of bounty hunters increased to the point that I don't believe anymore in the nation. Yeah. I don't believe anymore in the good intentions of the government. Oh, so-called government of Ukraine, which is being called government right now of Ukraine, which kidnaps people and kicks people and kills people on the streets. What am I talking about? I'm talking about right now is the same as killing people on the streets.
Yeah.
So in my understanding, there's a civil war and there's an ethnocide towards the
The white Christian population.
White Christian population of Ukraine, mm-hmm. and there's the military war. So there are three wars currently going on in Ukraine.
Yeah, it's so before we move on, Zelensky wanted more patriots. I guess that's been cut off. They sent a letter and Trump didn't respond. Are they going to get to the point where they can't defend against incoming strikes?
Yes, and just several days ago, there was a huge strike in Kyiv because Zelensky ordered to shoot the rockets onto Russian territory and Donetsk region territory. And Putin got really furious about those strikes from Ukraine. And that is why just 5 days ago, there was a huge response strike onto Kyiv and some rockets hit several military buildings in Kyiv. And one of the rockets even flew to the near the building near Verkhovna Rada, near the building where you visited Kyiv.
Years ago.
Years ago. It's been 4 years quite, ago. Quite a year. Yeah. So it was the kind of the revenge strike on Kyiv, and apparently the air defense units, Patriots, that allocated near Kyiv and allocated in the center of Kyiv, could not hit the quantity of missiles incoming onto the center of Kyiv. Only several Patriot missiles were fired onto the incoming Russian missiles, and that's why the ballistic missiles shot from Russia hit their targets in Kyiv. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were a couple of photos and videos that some of those rockets did not hit intended. For example, one rocket hit the bazaar mm-hmm. near the military factory on Lukyanovsk metro station. But I think that was one of the rockets, and it was kind of, as you can call it, collateral damage or yes. side damage.
So the last question before we can move to your deck, but Zelensky is all about buying, I think, 150, Gripen aircraft from Sweden. These are like old technology, right? Can they even function in this battlefield, do you think?
I'm in my next phase of learning about the U.S. fighter airplanes. I visited several air shows recently. Mm-hmm. And I read about Gripen and the talks to get those Gripen air fighters have commenced 4 years ago. And what? For 4 years, they could not give those old fighters to Ukraine. What's the purpose of buying an airplane which was developed in 1970s? Yeah. I mean, this Gripen airplane is good for. It's even less technically advanced in comparison to MiG-29.
Yeah.
This is an old technology. The radars are very short. Mm-hmm. They cannot even fly to the front line. They can't even shoot the air-to-ground missiles.
Yeah.
Anybody who goes, who will fly on those Gripen airplanes near the front line, those are suicide raids. So, yeah.
It's almost like a kamikaze drone, almost.
Kamikaze drone, yeah. You can use those Gripen as kamikaze drones, just fly and just kill a tank.
Yeah.
Or kill some commanding point on Russian front line side, and that's it. Those are kamikaze airplanes. Yeah. No point of sending them to Ukraine. At this point of time, there is no point of sending them to Ukraine.
All right, should we get into your slide deck?
Yes, let's take a look at some of the slides.
Okay.
All right, a little sitrep about Ukraine. Next slide, please. So let's take a look at the front line. So you can see that, the picture is very similar to what we have seen 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is similar, but the front line is moving. Mm-hmm. And there were major battles fought for and around several cities in Ukraine. And as you can see on this map, if you could compare this to this, the same kind of map 4 years ago, the Ukrainian army is withdrawing. So let's take a look at the next slide. And this is the region of Zaporizhia. And what's interesting to look here is that the front line is alive. And the current advance is near Orekhovo, Orekhiv village, little village, approximately what 10 kilometers from the front line. And the current advance is in Kamianske and Stepove. And what's interesting to look at this little region of the war is that just 2 weeks ago, the local authorities of those villages near Pavlika, Lukyanovka, Zapashna, Mikhailovka, you can see this just in the middle, they declared the enforced evacuation. So that means that they prepared the population to escape the front line. And they do it in the last kind of resort. So that means that the Russian advance north on this region will be in those little villages, and Ukraine will, Ukrainian army do not have the means to defend those districts. Interesting for me to look at this little district, because my sister volunteered and she got drafted. And guess what? She spent 2 weeks at the hospital with the lungs inflammation. And 3 days ago, she got released from this hospital.
Was that because she was in a trench or something and got...
No. My sister volunteered 1 month ago to join the army as a private. And she got flu and she received an inflammation during her pioneer camp training near Zhytomyr. And she was hospitalized 3 weeks ago, and she spent 2 weeks with the inflammation on the drop machine because she had the inflammation. So my sister was sent near the front line, near Zaporizhia, because what they do is that they take fresh flesh bodies that they catch on the streets, or they take those volunteers who are young enough to actually do it, something like my sister. She's young enough and she's aggressive enough to join the army. So she got sent near the front line in Zaporizhia. Guess where they will send her? They will send her near Zapashne. They will send her near Zaporizhia to the trenches. I'm shocked. So let's go to the next
one. You're shocked because they're sending women there, or what? Or
because my sister got drafted. I'm shocked and I'm furious. And I'm furious because, and I'm shocked because they don't care. They simply take fresh flesh and they send anybody to the front line because they're looking for somebody just to do anything on the front line. There's no strategic
Just to catch bullets, essentially.
It is basically catch bullet and stand where you stand. That's it. There's no strategic operational command. I mean, looking at the maps, looking at the news, looking at what I hear from people, looking at what I hear from people who live in those little villages in frontline near Zaporizhia and Kryvyi Rih and Dnipropetrovsk. My conclusion is that there is no strategic or operational tactical command. The battalion commanders, they do not understand the strategy of defense, and they do not understand the strategy of holding the lines, because the lines are moving. And this month, this is my personal conclusion, and I'm furious about this.
Next slide.
So this is Pokrovsk, and my little story about Pokrovsk is that several years ago I was a project manager of the humanitarian operations, and we were one of three charities that actually delivered food, medicine, and generators to the gray zones near the front line. And my story about this map is that you can see little city of Pokrovsk and Mirnograd. So mm-hmm. Pokrovsk was lost 3 weeks ago. Mirnograd was lost, 2 weeks ago? And we, as a charity, we had our logistical relay point in a high school in Pokrovsk. And Iskander missile went straight into this high school. Six of our volunteers were killed immediately. Mm-hmm. We had the food that we stored in the school was supplied to us by World Trade World Food Program, mm-hmm. WFP. And we also had donor supplies from American private donors. I called WFP. I called our American donors and I told them, could you please send your journalists, or could you please send your investigators or prosecutors to this high school? This is the criminal military criminal event. Mm-hmm. If you don't care about the quantity of food you supply to us, well, we care about our volunteers.
Yeah.
We care about our people because we deliver to people in need. Guess what? No one wanted to go to Pokrovsk. They mm-hmm. told me that they're busy.
Yeah.
They told me, Andrew, you should be careful. Take mm-hmm. care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So just 1 year ago, this map, which you see right now on the street, was approximately 100 kilometers to the right. And this is why for a person who's looking at this map, if you are not attentive, the maps, they look the same, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
This means that the front line is alive and people hurt and people withdraw. And next point of loss will be little villages and little cities near Dnipropetrovsk. And it is approximately 100 kilometers to Dnipropetrovsk. People do not realize the distance. 100 mm-hmm. kilometers is 60 miles. 60 yeah. miles is what? It is 1 hour in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next slide. So this little map is from Kramatorsk, and you can see here that Russians advanced near Kramatorsk and Slavyansk. So Slavyansk, the Russian forces are on the outskirts of Slavyansk, and Slavyansk city has been evacuated approximately 6 months ago, and based on the map. I can tell you that Russian forces are just on the outskirts of Kramatorsk. And when Russian forces take Slavyansk and Kramatorsk, they will simply close the cauldron, because it, right here on the map, you see that there is a cauldron forming.
Mm-hmm.
And then Russian forces are approximately, 100 kilometers to Pavlograd. And Pavlograd on the left, you can see Pavlograd on the left. Mm-hmm. Pavlograd is basically is an outskirt of Dnipropetrovsk, and there's no terrain to defend. So whenever Russian forces go left of Kramatorsk and Slavyansk, and they go to Petropavlivka, there is no terrain to defend. It's a pure flat terrain. Of course, the drones will fly and destroy Russian troops and trucks and tanks and so on and so on. But if Russians decide to make ground strike or ground, how do you call it in military terms?
In advance?
Fast advance using the tanks and using the airplanes. They can do it. They can do it within 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's take a look on the next. So Sumy, recently there has been an evacuation enforced, announced near Sumy. And we don't see a lot of battalions of Russians near Sumy. Well, let's calculate 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 6, 7 battalions of Russian forces near Sumy. But they advance, and the evacuation was declared in those villages, and Ukrainians simply do not understand what's going on in Sumy. Next slide. Deserters. The quantity of deserters is enormous. Mm-hmm. And what's more problematic is that those deserters try to hide from the bounty hunters. So the bounty hunters try to find deserters, and bounty hunters try to find fresh blood and fresh bodies for the unlawful, illegal military campaign of private army of Ukraine. Next slide. The quantity of deserters is estimated above 500,000 people.
Wow.
And that means that the estimated quantity of deserters per month is more than 10,000 of people, or several thousand per week. So that means that...
How do they do that? Do they just go to the front and then slip away in the night? Or do you know how they're doing this?
Yes, exactly. They slip away from the night, or they pay their commander 2,000, 3,000 to just to get away from the front line. Mm-hmm. The price to get away from the front line with the paper is $6,000. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get a paper from your commander for just for 2 days, 3 days, you pay $3,000 and you get away for 3 days. Mm. And within 3 days, you need to reach your, let's say, your local village or your city, your family, and then you will hide. Or there's the evacuation price. You pay $12,000. The ambulance comes to the front line, take you, and you ride the ambulance to your family. It's called the ambulance evacuation to your family. $12,000.
So how are they getting across the border, or are they? I mean, are they just staying?
No. The deserters will stay in Ukraine and they hide with their families. The price to get outside of Ukraine is $26,000. So let's say you want to get out of the front line. So you pay $20,000 for the ambulance to be evacuated on an ambulance. And additional $26,000 to get out of the borders with the papers. Well, if you don't need the papers because you don't want to come back to Ukraine after, you can pay $12,000 and people, so $20,000 on the ambulance to get out of the front line, $12,000 to get through the borders without the papers. So you pay $30,000 for your price, for your life.
And wow.
So some people actually paid this kind of money and they tried to get away from the front line. Simple people pay, the vacation is $500 per day. 3 days vacation, $2,000, $3,000, depending on where the troops are located. Mm-hmm. So some people simply pay the vacation price and then they disappear and they don't come back to the front line.
Yeah.
So this is how it works.
Gotcha. Okay. Next slide.
Next slide. Yeah, let's take a look at the next slide. So there were more people began to come to this Marathon Shmarathon. There's only one TV channel in Ukraine. And some people have begun to speak about the quantity of corruption on the war. And this little guy during the primetime lifetime show, he said that there's an estimated $1 million collected in bribes for the kidnapping and bounty hunting in Ukraine. Well, I have seen other expert opinions, and the expert opinions are that the war in Ukraine collects estimated $2 billion in bribes from the population of Ukraine. And Zelensky and Yermak personally obtain approximately $300 million per year in bribes from the people who don't want to serve the army and who simply want to pay a little bribe and do not go to the army.
Yeah.
So it is a big business machine right now in Ukraine.
Wow.
Next slide. All men in Ukraine are forced to download this idiotic software application. It's called Aberig, or it's called Reserve, meaning that you're in reserve and you have to be electronically registered within the system. So this little reserve software tracks your location, and if you do not appear and if you do not register in this little registration tool, the government of Ukraine, which is not the government, but it's authentical, they if they arrest you on the street, and if you don't have this reserve on your mobile phone, they will arrest you and throw you into the jail and then arrest your bank accounts. And then they will arrest your apartment. Mm-hmm. So guess what? The men are forced to download this, and men need to go and register for this digital register tool. So let's say that you register in this, but you do not appear at the bounty hunting mobilization point. They have your address already in the system, so they arrest you again, and then they arrest your bank accounts, they arrest your apartment, and they take away your car. So for me, I personally, I do not have this. But I have been already violated. I have already violated the not a law of Ukraine, because if I download this, they will take away my apartment. If I do not download this, they take away my apartment.
Yeah.
So what should they do?
So what Americans need to realize is Ukraine is a test bed, and all of this technology for mobilization and is all coming here. I mean, you've got the guy that just won against Massey in Kentucky is talking about bringing the draft back in the U.S. So it's a test bed, and they're testing all this technology that they want to use here. So back to you.
Yeah, next slide. Let's take a look at the next slide. And the next slide is quite shocking. Don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-Semitic. I think that people from Israel should live in Israel, and people of Ukraine should live in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I'm not nationalistic, I'm internationalistic. American society is very much mixed, and I respect all nations and ethnies who live in the United States. But looking at the pictures, I think that Ukraine is not for Ukrainians anymore. Mm. How in the world, and this is not the first occasion, how in the world Hasid, which you see on the picture, come and have a meeting with the head of not-so-national police of Ukraine, and that the national commander of not-so-national police of Ukraine takes orders from Hasids from Israel? Guess what? The national not-so-national police of Ukraine is not a governmental entity. I found documents that the police in Ukraine is a private company. And as a private company, this private company is hired to help private bounty hunters to hunt men on the streets of villages and cities in Ukraine.
Wow.
So I'm looking at this, and it's not a conspiracy theory. I am not a conspiracy theorist. I'm an observer. I'm an analyst who, and I'm looking at the pictures, I'm looking at the events, and I draw the line. Next slide, please. And the last slide for today, Yermak, who is one of the usurpers in Ukraine currently, and he's not even a governmental employee, because he served as the head of the administration, and the head of administration of Zelensky is not a governmental position. It's not in the Constitution. So he's an unconstitutional usurper. So NABU is a National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, which was organized by several people from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So NABU charged and arrested Yermak several weeks ago. They jailed him, and they could not arrest him. He went out of the jail. He paid 140 million hryvnia. So this is approximately what? $2.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out of the jail. And location is unknown. And nobody knows where Yermak is.
So he just paid his way out, essentially.
He paid his way out using the money he stole from the United States government.
Yeah, wow.
And NABU, as an arm of FBI, they could not do anything. What a surprise. Well, I knew that this would be a show, a theater. But I had my hope that if NABU arrested Yermak, they would hold him in the jail, but they could not.
Well, Soros, I mean, NABU is run, it was created by Soros, right? I mean, it's extra governmental organization that it's kind of a control mechanism, I think. So if they don't want to control it, they're not going to control it, right? Am I wrong?
NABU was created by several people who served at the embassy of the United States. And of course, this organization, NABU, was influenced by several cadres from Soros-related organizations.
Interesting. Well, my friend, I feel your pain for your country. You know, we are fighting the good fight to try to end this war. We'll keep it up, and I really appreciate your time. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think this is it for today. Thank you for this little sit-rep.
Yes, we will have you back, Alex. Thank you very much, my friend.
Bye, Todd.
Take care. All right, you see the desperation in Ukraine. I want to talk about a few things. My book, Paying the Price, The Untold Story of the Iranian Resistance. If you want to know how to stop the regime in Iran, you can do it from the inside and not by American money or troops. So Paying the Price, The Untold Story of the Iranian Resistance. You can order anywhere books are sold online or at historyofbooks.com. They have signed copies. Anybody who loves geopolitics, maybe that uncle who loves the world events and thinks he's smart, I guarantee he'll learn a lot from this book. So check it out, please. I'm going to leave you with, a video. You know, the Ukrainian people have been very good to me. I'm not anti-Ukrainian. I'm anti-war and genocide. And I think this war needs to end. Never should have started in the first place. And Biden and the regime and the blob wanted it for a variety of reasons. But it's a fascinating, beautiful, educated culture. And, you know, I used to go listen, for instance, in the subways, which are beautiful, not as beautiful as Russia's, but they're beautiful. I would go down and just listen to the classical music. People would just sit up and play in the subways. You don't get rap or anything like that. You get beautiful cellists and just amazing. But so the culture is there, but I wanted to play for you. These are children graduating high school in Kharkiv. They're having a celebration in a bomb shelter in East Ukraine. And I thought this would give you an idea of the culture that we're looking at. And then we'll close the show out. Please check out our social media, CDM_press at X, CDM1 on Rumble, and CDM on YouTube. Please go and subscribe. We need those numbers to grow. Check out our no ad subscriptions at my.cdm.press. Get access to all of our content with no ads. People love it. So we've had a lot of good success with that. So please support us that way. All right, here you go as a treat for you. Ukrainian kids celebrating their graduation underground. And I think you'll enjoy this, and then we'll close the show out.
I take a look at you, you take me out of the ordinary. I want you laying down to the planetary. On the edge of your knife, stay a drunken mind. You hear yourself in the clouds, a jealous knowing we found. So this world will be ordinary. You got me kissing the ground when you say.
for me.